You're listening to Food Integrity Now with your host, Carol Grave. Hello and welcome to Food Integrity Now. I'm Carol Grave. I'm your host today. At Food Integrity Now, we envision a world without GMOs, a thriving world where our food is safe for our children and our grandchildren. If you share this vision, go to our website and join us. Our show today is brought to you by Wild Dolphin Swim Adventures. Have you ever dreamed about swimming with the dolphins in the wild? I'm not talking about what you do at dolphin quests or the ones in captivity. I'm talking about swimming with them in an integrous and respectful way. The dolphins love to play and interact with humans. And at Wild Dolphin Swim Adventures, we can make your dream come true. I'm Carol, and I'm a certified life coach, I'm a food educator, and the host of Food Integrity Now. Please join me for a 7-day retreat to experience the beauty of an ocean view home, organic meals, individual coaching and group coaching, and of course, swimming alongside the dolphins in an integrous and respectful way. This is truly a trip of a lifetime. To find out more about our upcoming trip this October, go to wilddolphinswimadventures.com or email me at carolgrave333@gmail.com. Again, that's Carol, G-R-I-E-V-E, 333@gmail.com. My guest today is Bonnie Hari. Bonnie started foodbabe.com in April 2011 to spread information about what is really happening with the American food supply. She teaches people how to make the right purchasing decisions at the grocery store, how to live an organic lifestyle, and how to travel healthfully around the world. The success in her writing and her investigative work can be seen in the way food companies react to her amazing ability to find and expose the truth. She recently took on Kraft Macaroni and Cheese, which gained her national attention, and she exposed the yellow dye that they use in their product. And we'll have her tell us a little bit more about that. Bonnie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Carol. Very excited to be here today.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on our show today. And I'd love to know a little bit more about you and your background and how you became a food educator.
Well, it was really by accident, and I don't wish this path on anyone either, because I had to go through a lot of pain to get where I am today. And in high school, it was really funny. I quit the cheerleading team so I could join the debate team, and so I spent every summer going to places like Dartmouth College and burying myself in books and researching for that year's topic. And one year's topic was on healthcare. So I learned a lot about the healthcare system and what was really happening. And so I started to, get an inkling back then in high school, and I ended up becoming one of the nationally ranked high school debaters and, recruited to college to debate. And I figured out that basically that debate was not a career. And I needed to do something with my life so I could support myself out of college. And so I ended up majoring in computer science and taking the traditional route of most Americans, which is, to go and work for a big corporation. And one of the top management consulting firms actually hired me right out of school, and I started working for them. And, I had been fairly healthy. I worked out, and I thought, I was eating somewhat, low fat or low calorie. I followed all the conventional wisdom that really dupes a lot of Americans here today, even still. And I thought I was doing the right thing. But as soon as I got into a corporate environment and started following the habits of everyone around me, working crazy hours, eating on the go, eating all the things that my company was catering in instead of really taking control of my health, and taking control of my food and picking my own food, I ate what everybody else was eating around me, and I got extremely sick. I gained probably 30 or more pounds within a short time frame, 3 or 4 months, And I felt horrible. You know, I was working, trying to you know, run the rat race, trying to get promoted. And I was traveling a lot. I was traveling Sunday through Thursday. So my whole schedule was kind of thrown off, and I didn't really know how to take care of myself. I didn't know about organic food. I didn't know that there was all of these tips and strategies on that you could employ, or even to be self-confident enough to tell my boss, no, I'm not going to eat that chicken parmesan tonight. I'm going to go get a salad. I'll be right back. You know, I didn't have that confidence coming out of school because I wanted to fit in and I wanted to do what all my coworkers were doing. So I lived this typical American lifestyle. I took on the habit of coffee and drinking, eating at the big steakhouses because it was free. You know, this company was paying for all of my meals. So it was a very exciting time. It was extravagant, an extravagant lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And so ended up getting sick. And one day on my couch, right after I ate, actually, it was so bizarre, a Chick-fil-A chicken sandwich, thinking it was healthy because it was only 300 calories. Had no idea it had 100 ingredients in it and all sorts of other things. But I was eating that. And then shortly thereafter, I had a terrible pain in my side, so bad that I called my parents, who quickly came, who were living in the same town, thankfully, quickly came and got me and took me to the hospital. And the emergency room doctor told me to go home, that there was nothing wrong with me, and to take Advil. And thank goodness for my parents having a good intuition. They had me see another doctor for a second opinion the next day. And that doctor said I needed to have my appendix out immediately.
Wow.
And so, yeah, so I had an inflamed appendix about to burst. Could have died, honestly, had I not, had that second opinion, had I followed the advice of the first emergency room doctor. And it was that moment that I kind of said, whoa, whoa, whoa. Why did I get appendicitis? This is so bizarre. Like, you know, I shouldn't be sick. I'm like 23 years old. This is not good. And, I kind of made a decision right then and there, you know, that I would take control of my health. And what I found out quickly just researching appendicitis is that it's not random like the doctors were telling me. It was really could be related to what I was eating and how I was living my life and the stress that I was putting on my body. And so right then and there, and it was December that this all happened. So everybody's out celebrating the holidays and I'm in bed recovering. And it took me a lot longer to recover than most people with appendicitis. Most people can recover in a week or so. It took me 3 or 4 weeks because my body was so inflamed and acidic and just out of shape. And
you know what's so interesting, Bonnie? My daughter, who was 18 at the time, and it was right around Christmas time too, we were skiing at Lake Tahoe, she had the same thing happen. We rushed her to the emergency room there, and they said if we wouldn't have gotten there, you know, she could have died. So same type situation around the same age.
And I'm just wondering, you know, when you're that age, and I don't know how your daughter eats, but you know, when you're that age, you think you're invincible.
Right. She would, at that point in time, you know, she's in her 30s now, you know, she was just eating junk.
Yeah. Yeah. And you think you're invincible because your body can burn it off and you're not, you know, and at that point, you know, I was so sick that I was gaining weight, you know, but it was just, it was a really eye-opening experience, and an experience that changed my life forever, because at that moment I said, no job, nobody in my life can come before me and taking care of my health and me.
I made a decision.
Yeah. And I just, you know, it was like, you know, everything, you know, I wasn't giving back to my friends during that period. I wasn't really even doing my best on my job, I think, because I just felt so bad and I was overworked. You know, I mean, there's so many parts of my life that were struggling. I didn't really see it at the time. When I look back, I'm like, wow, if I felt like I do now and was doing that job, I would be taking over the company.
Yeah. Right.
And it's so amazing once you start to feel good and you figure out how to feel good and what's really in your food that you start to really give back to the world. And so at that moment, you know, I taught myself, number one, how to lose this weight. I figured that part out. And then I've been able to maintain a really, you know, my ideal weight for over 10 years now since that. And,
kind of duped by the low fat thing.
Oh, absolutely. The calorie thing.
Yes.
You know, the low calorie thing, the diet soda. I mean, I was never really into diet soda, but I was into like sugar free or, you know, low fat or, you know, it's Froyo. It's only, you know, 10 calories an ounce or whatever. When meanwhile, there's, you know, thousands of ingredients that go into and chemical processes that provide absolutely zero nutrition to your body. And I figured out that everything that I need to put in my body, everything I need to eat needs to provide me some form of really positive nutrition and energy. Otherwise, it's not going to serve my skin. It's not going to serve my hair. It's not going to serve my weight. It's not going to serve the way I feel, my energy level, all of that. And so, you know, I went on this quest just like I did, you know, back in high school during the summers where I would go and research things voraciously. I did the same thing with my health, and I read everything. I read every book, every weight loss book, every health book. I mean, any book you can imagine around that period, that 5-year period, I just became so engrossed. And it was kind of like my hobby that I just learned all this stuff and I was so interested in it. I'd listen to, you know, podcasts back then. I would do whatever I could to get the cutting edge information. And I came across, you know, some mentors, which was really cool. People who knew about natural living and holistic living. And
who were those people? Can you name any of them? I'm curious.
Sure. You know, one of the main people that I followed early on was Gabriel Cousins.
Mm-hmm.
And he really demystified what's really in food before a lot of people. And as well as Dr. Mercola. You know, Dr. Mercola was one of the first people to really out the food industry, you know, in a very public online way. And reading his stuff early on, you know, my eyes became opened really quickly. And he had such a far reach. It was easy to get to me because he was, so, you know, it was easy to find on the internet. And since then, you know, I've found countless mentors when it comes to food and nutrition. And so many people have good bits of information to offer. The Gerson therapy, learning about how juicing can heal cancer.
Oh, I love her. Charlotte's been on Food Integrity Now 2 times and she's an amazing woman.
Yeah, amazing. And then even Norman Walker, who invented the juice, you know, the pressed juicing machine,
mm-hmm.
The Norwalk. I mean,
right.
Even his writings are incredible. You know, if people just read, and his books aren't even that thick or that big. I mean, if people just pick up those books, I mean, it's just like this wisdom back when that was being, you know, when it was so taboo to juice and like, you know, wasn't like a fad or anything and, or even to eat raw and to have, you know, a main, a plant-based diet. You know, all of those things, were talked about back in the day when people were trying to heal naturally and reading about that wisdom and reading about those strategies is very inspiring and something that I've kind of figured out on the way that I eat, which is mainly plant-based, but I do allow myself to have the occasional meat or dairy when it's the most or the least processed, the most close to nature as possible.
Yes, I do the same way. You know, if I eat meat, which is not very often, it's got to be grass fed, and I got to know where it came from.
Yeah, absolutely, and so that's how I've been living my life. And it's funny, you know, fast forward 5 years later, I'm still a management consultant during this whole time, and I come across another very stressful situation, and instead, it has nothing to do really with the way I'm eating or the way I am working out because I'm maintaining my weight. I look great. Everything's great, going great from an aesthetic standpoint. But internally, the stress level was causing all sorts of havoc. I wasn't sleeping at night. I had anxiety. All of these things were happening because I was in a very stressful situation at work. And so I go to my doctor and I'm like, listen, I haven't been able to sleep in like 3 weeks. And I just, you know, I hadn't found acupuncture yet. I hadn't found any of these natural therapies or to really heal myself naturally. And so I go to my doctor and she says, you immediately need to go on these four pills. And these four pills, when I looked them up online, were the worst psychiatric drugs you've ever imagined. Okay. Treating things like bipolar and schizophrenia and all these things that I knew I didn't have. You know, the symptoms were anxiety and I couldn't sleep at night. I didn't have depression. Why is she putting me on a depression drug? You know, and I started to question Western medicine at that point. And I said, well, I've been believing my doctor this whole time, you know, believing what they tell me and what I should take. And I don't think I need to be believing them. And so I found – it took me a long time to find the right doctor, but I ended up finding the right doctor, which was incredible. And I just couldn't believe that a general practitioner would even prescribe those amounts of drugs when they're not even a psychiatrist to begin with, which was just shocking to me. And how many people – around the United States, is this happening to?
Yeah, I think it happens quite often, and that is a scary thing because then you have a physician who's not trained in psychology or psychiatry administering this medication and just kind of giving it to people without, you know, without the therapy, because I think that there is a place for Western medicine to a degree. And, you know, if you go and you're so depressed and maybe you can use some of these drugs for a short period of time as a tool while you're going through counseling. But certainly I disagree with it, you know, with the GP just handing it out.
Yeah, no, and I agree. You know, the Western medicine has its place, but did the doctor ask me, are you really taking the time to work out? Have you tried yoga? Have you tried meditation? Have you, what are you eating these days? Are you drinking a lot of coffee? That can cause anxiety. I mean, there's just so many things that they could have been asking me and I would have eliminated or tried, and I would have never tried any of that stuff or even been put in that situation. And that's really where the disconnect is, you know, with our healthcare system is we're not working on prevention. We're not working on healing our body naturally. We're working on Band-Aids. And that's all it is fueling the amount of money that the pharmaceutical industry makes. And it's really sad.
It is sad. And one thing that you mentioned, that you weren't feeling good because you were having anxiety. And I truly believe, and I don't think this gets talked about a lot, whatever state we're in when we're eating food, that really determines what is going to happen with that food. So if we're eating and we're very anxious and we're feeling emotional and we're not in a place of being relaxed and honoring our food, I truly believe that that changes the energy of the food and can actually make even the most healthy food toxic.
And you know, and I can't agree with you more on that statement. I mean, there's such a, your mind has such a powerful effect on how your body feels and how it reacts to things and how it takes in nutrients, and what you believe really has a powerful effect on the way you feel. And if I had known that my mind was that powerful back then, oh goodness gracious, you know? So, and once you unlock that, there's this great book out by Dr. Rankin, Lisa Rankin, Mind Over Medicine. Fabulous, fabulous book. And she talks about how we're not, you know, we shouldn't be held hostage to our genes and what we've been told we're going to have. We decide what we're going to have and what we're not going to have.
Right. I agree wholeheartedly. And, you know, we may have a predisposition in our DNA, but it doesn't mean it's a given. And, you know, I hear people say sometimes things like, oh, well, my mother had a hysterectomy at the age of 40, so I'm probably going to have the same thing. And I go, whoa, 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 why? You know, it's not a guarantee by any means. And what you were saying is just so true.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And, you know, once I got kind of figured all that stuff out, and I found out that I could go to acupuncture and feel amazing, and that you know, I was treating my body from a holistic level. You know, I was able to get off every single prescription drug I was on. I was on like 3 different medications for asthma. You know, my whole life I'd had asthma. And so I always thought I always had to take all this stuff. And as soon as I started treating myself holistically, I was able to get off those too. So right now I take 0 prescription drugs, whereas in my early 20s, I was taking like 8 or 9. I mean, it's just
isn't that
insane.
Amazing? Gosh. And that has become somewhat the norm.
Yeah. And I mean, to think now that I was in my early 20s taking that many drugs, and it wasn't like, you know, illegal drugs that I was, you know, taking because I wanted to. It was prescribed from a doctor. And to think there's so many people out there that just, they put their doctor up on a pedestal and they think that they're, you know, the authority on how they should feel is really a tough thing to witness now. That I know that, you know, once you figure out what doctors are taught in school, which they're taught how to treat with medicine, you begin to realize, well, were they taught about how meditation can completely eliminate anxiety? No, they weren't.
You're
so
right.
Of course they're not going to recommend that, you know? But you need to find, you know, you have to go on that search. You know, unfortunately, we have to, all as Americans and individuals, we need to find the best strategies for ourselves. And that's why I want to empower people to investigate what's in their food. And that's why that's my tagline on my website, because it's I want people to know, and I want people to understand what these ingredients and chemicals in food and antibiotics and added growth hormone and all of these crazy preservatives added to our food, what it's doing to us. It's actually embalming us before we die, in a way.
Yeah, and I agree with you totally on that, and I believe the same thing too, that I don't even want people to believe what I say. I want them to do their own research. Don't you know, don't make me the man in the white coat just because I do these podcasts. I want you to do your own research. I want you to, you know, use the internet while we still can. And, you know, be discerning though. Don't believe everything you read. You really have to be your own food advocate these days.
Yeah, you totally do. And it's so funny, you know, people will, and they're so, I love everyone who's following the blog, and, you know, without the readers, I mean, I definitely would not have a platform at all. And it's amazing the amount of readers that the blog Food Babe has gotten. And it's so awesome hearing from everyone. But, you know, people ask me, you know, like, what do you think of so-and-so product? And, you know, what I like to really respond back with is, you know, what are the ingredients? Look at the ingredients, investigate those, look it up. If you can't pronounce it, if you don't know what that is, there's a good chance you probably shouldn't be eating it. So
that's a good rule. So let's talk about your blog. So when did you started it in 2010, right? Is that correct?
That's right. And in 2010, actually, was it 2010? What's today? No, 2011. 2011. April 2011.
Okay.
It's a little older than 2 years, which is really exciting. And I started it because I went on this, you know, as a management consultant, I was still working when I started it. I just quit in January. And now I'm working on Food Babe full time. But
excellent.
Yeah, I know it was a journey, but it's been amazing. So, you know, I started it because like a year prior to that, I took on a role where I was traveling all the time again with another consulting firm. And I was scared. I was like, oh, is that all that stuff going to happen again? How am I going to teach myself all these tricks on how to live organically on the road? And where am I going to eat all the time? And like, how am I going to bring my food with me? I figured out everything. I figured out anything. I didn't gain a pound. I didn't feel bad. I felt amazing. I was doing great at work. Everything was so fabulous. And I along the way became friends with a few individuals who learned a ton from me. And they said to me, please, please share this knowledge with everyone else. And you should, this should be your job. Like, you should quit right now and this should be your job. And I said, you're crazy. You know, I've been doing this for 10 years. I'm going to continue to be a management consultant. You're crazy. So like, we'll just start a blog and see what happens. And I'm like, okay, you know, yeah, I mean, that sounds good. And so family and friends like begged me to do this. And so at first, all I did was like share recipes and kind of like my two cents on things. But then slowly I started gaining these followers that I didn't know who they were, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they were like so like passionate about this subject, and they were sharing stuff with me, and I was learning things from them. And it was just like this wonderful synergy of energy, you know, between all of the people that started to find me. And I started to realize that as a blogger, you kind of have this influence. Like, you can actually influence people's decisions, and in a very positive light. You can give back to the world. You can change the world through writing. And I have to tell you the truth. Writing is really hard for me. It's not something that it just comes to me really easy. So every time I write a blog post, it takes me several hours. And it's not a fun activity, really, other than the fact that I know that I'm going to be able to reach people. And so I started writing about companies. One of the first companies I wrote about was a frozen yogurt company that was using the marketing organic tastes better. And when I found out what was really in their organic yogurt, which they used organic milk, but then they added trans fat, artificial colors, artificial preservatives, all on top of organic milk, I flipped out. I was just like, you know, they really duped me, because I was having it at the mall, because I was like, oh, this is organic yogurt. It's so delicious. And no, they totally duped me. And I said, nobody else is going to be duped. I'm going to write about this. And little did I know the power that I had as a blogger, but the CEO contacts me and takes down all the marketing.
Wonderful. And I know you've done this in several ways. Share some more stories about how your blogging has affected some of these companies, and really kind of you've required that they have more integrity.
Yeah. Well, one great one with the tagline "Food with Integrity" was Chipotle. Chipotle, you know, told us that they are buying things local and that they care about our food and they care about where they get their meat from. But I found out they wouldn't release their ingredients to me. When I called their headquarters, they asked me if I had an allergy to something. I said, well, wait a minute. I don't have to have an allergy to something to want to know what I'm eating. And they wouldn't give me the ingredients. And so I thought that was so bizarre. I'm like, the headquarters won't even give me what's in their like corn tortilla. That's insane. So I went to the store. I went to a couple different stores to try to, you know, convince one of the employees to like let me look at the box of ingredients and write down the ingredients and really understand what's in it. And I got one person to comply, which was incredible. So I was able to find out that, you know, their flour tortilla has trans fat in it, and that their, you know, black beans were made with soybean oil, GMO soybean oil. And so, you know, I outed them, you know, on the blog, and they quickly reacted. They immediately, and this shows what kind of company that they are. They quickly reacted. The head of public relations and communications reached out to me immediately and said, listen, we want to put the ingredients on there. We're so sorry. We're going to start telling people what's in their, you know, when they call, you know, and they go, give us some time to put it on there. And I said, well, why do you need this time? Are you scared to say that you're using these genetically engineered ingredients? And he goes, well, you know, we're making some changes, so we want to try to make those changes first. And I said, okay, well, like, you know, I mean, I can help you. You know, I know computers. I can help you put the ingredient list on your website, you know, if you need help, if you don't have the manpower.
That's great.
And they didn't take me up on the offer, but they did – put it on eventually about six months later. And it was a wonderful birthday gift. It was on my birthday this year, on March 22nd. I got an email from Chipotle that said, ta-da, and a link to the ingredients. So, you know.
So do they still use the soy oil?
They don't, actually. They've started to move towards rice bran oil, which is fantastic. And that's really a fantastic move. And I think they with the phrase food with integrity, they want to make sure they uphold that. And
oh, that's
so,
great.
Yeah. So like you can go and get a black bean salad now. You don't have to worry about GMOs and it's mostly organic and no, you know, growth hormone or antibiotics in the sour cream. So you can actually have a good meal there now, which is so fantastic.
How about with their chicken though? What about, do they feed? I'm sure those aren't pasture raised chickens, are they?
They're not. But they're trying to make it, you know, like, you know, it's antibiotic free, which is really great. And
hormone and chicken, free.
Right. And their chicken, is made with still with some genetically engineered ingredients from what I remember. And so, you know, the only meat that isn't made with any genetically engineered ingredients is the pork. However, if the pork's being fed GMO corn or soy, you got to wonder considering the recent study that just came out.
Right.
But yeah. So
I was recently at an Udi's in Denver. And I'm like you. I go in there and I say, okay, what kind of oil do you use? You know, because they had these great looking salads and stuff. And so they gave me their list and it's soy and canola oil. And I go, really? So, you know, I think, you know, and I told everybody at the table, I said, okay, we all need to get on their site and call them and ask them if they could change their oil. You know, because, you know, people are coming there and going, oh, great. They have all these great salads and it's gluten free, but, you know, it's loaded with GMOs.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's about just speaking up.
Yeah, it totally is about speaking up. And I mean, I think one of the most fundamental things I like to do, and this really gets the conversation going, and it educates people that may not be aware of these things. And it's people who work in restaurants. It is amazing how many people, you know, I used to work in a restaurant. I worked at the Pancake House, you know, for a whole summer. And before that, I worked at a sports bar, you know, serving tables. And when I worked at these restaurants, I had no idea what was in the food. Like I kind of knew or whatever. And I would, you know, if somebody had an allergy or something, I'd go find out for them or whatever. But I didn't know if they were using corn or soybean oil or any of these other things. And so when I go out to eat, I like to ask the server, hey, do you know if you're using corn or soybean oil in any of this food? And if you are, I don't want any of it cooked with it. And I'd prefer butter or olive oil instead. Even regular butter over genetically engineered soybean or corn would be way better. And, or I'll have it dry, you know, or whatever. And so, and it's such an educational opportunity because usually the server will be inquisitive. Like, do you have an allergy? I'll say, no, actually it's genetically engineered. And that's an ingredient that I want to avoid because of this, this, and this. And so it's a really good opportunity to get people who are working in restaurants understanding these ingredients. And then they start to, you know, they're having a conversation with the chef in the back. And they're like, yeah, this patron came in today and blah, blah, blah. You know, and it starts a conversation. It starts, you know, the revolution to keep going and to make changes, especially within restaurants. Because I think restaurants are so, they're geared towards just like big food companies on the bottom line. That, you know, they're skimping wherever they can and they're using the cheapest ingredients, which unfortunately are genetically engineered.
Yeah, it is unfortunate, but you pretty much, unless you're eating at a truly organic restaurant, it's really difficult to avoid GMOs when you're eating out.
No, it absolutely is. And the number one question is, what oil are you using? It really
it
is.
It's mine too. That's the first thing I want to know because so many things. I mean, they make salad dressings with it. They fry things in it. They saute in it. So it's, you know, it affects, you know, most of their food.
Yeah.
So then you started your blog and did you do your, and by the way, Vani's blog is foodbabe.com. Is that correct?
Yeah,
okay,
that's right.
Okay. And so then when did you start your Facebook page? Did you do that simultaneously or how did that all go?
So Facebook was a little bit of an intervention too, which was so funny. I remember I was in Chicago at a girls' weekend and all my girlfriends said, listen, you know nothing about our lives because you're not on Facebook, Vani. Will you please get on Facebook? Because I really need you to get on Facebook so you can see my pictures from, you know, this or that.
Right.
And And I said to them, I said, listen, you know, that social media stuff, that's crazy. They know all your stuff. They know what's going on. They can follow you. My employer would freak out, you know, and I thought all of these horrible things about social media. So when I started my blog, I had to like figure out like, how am I going to share my blog with like even my friends, like in my family? Like, how am I going to do, like, how are they going to know I posted something new? And so I literally, a couple months before I started my blog, joined Facebook for the first time. So Facebook, my social media experience is as old as my blog, which is so funny.
And you so are everyone, approaching 100,000 likes, correct?
Yeah,
that is amazing.
I must be doing something right. You know, it has nothing to do with my social media skills and everything I think to do with my message and the information that I'm providing, because I'm providing information that people don't get, that I like to think people really aren't getting other places. They're not really understanding, like no one's going to do a thorough, and I haven't seen it, a thorough review of the ingredients at Starbucks, you know?
Right.
You know, people are, I don't know if they're scared to do it or if they're just, or if people are, worried about being sued or whatever, but maybe I have courage and guts that are go beyond, you know, my realm of like, you know, understanding. But, you know, in order to really out the companies that are using these ingredients, we have to post the list of ingredients. We have to discuss the ingredients. We got to understand what's in them. And the more I see that being done, there's this great infographic I shared today on, you know, on the different yogurt tubes that are available, for kids, you know, and Huffington Post finally, you know, they posted the ingredients and they talked about the ingredients. Like that's the type of conversation we need to be having. So people move away from what's on the label, the low calorie, the low fat, the high in omega-3, or, you know, all these other new things that are happening on labels. No, you know, non-GMO. Well, maybe the product is non-GMO, but what if it has carrageenan in it?
Right.
You know, a stomach inflammatory, and it could be, you know, a carcinogen.
And that, well, and that ingredient is on organic labels too, which really upsets me.
Right. And so it's more about the label. It's more about the ingredients. And so, and that's really what I want to share with people. And I want to show people information that relates to their everyday. So like, for example, you know, when I talk about non-GMO snacks, I want to show people what the GMO snacks are too. And I want to show the good alternatives so that there's options for people. Like one of the things that, you know, I like to do is I go into my dad's pantry, for instance, and he's, you know, he's on again, off again, kind of like, you know, he doesn't really try to pay attention to what I'm doing, but he kind of knows what I'm doing, you know, but he's still buying like Cheetos and other things that like drive me bonkers because he's just a snackaholic. So I'll go in there and I'll go into his pantry and my mom claims that she didn't buy it because, you know, my dad did it on his own. And so my mom like pleads the fifth. Okay. And so my dad will have these snacks in there and I'll take them out and I'll replace them. And I'll replace them with like an organic late July chip or something that, you know, is not going to harm him, but is going to get it. He's going to be able to get a snack on, you know? So, you know, giving people those like alternative items. Like for example, you know, I used to love Twizzlers. Oh, Twizzlers were so great growing up. You know, I'd take them to the movies, like everything. But now like I wouldn't even go near a Twizzler. I go for the pandas, you know, the panda licorice if I'm really having a licorice craving.
Yeah.
You know? So,
yeah, I hear
so
you.
So it's just figuring out the alternatives of what you can do. And once you figure out the alternatives, I really think that this lifestyle becomes a lot easier because you don't feel so like, oh my God, I got to cook everything at home. I have to buy everything organic and local. And oh my gosh, it's going to take me so much time. And I don't have time because I have five kids and a husband to feed. And, you know, I'm crazy busy at work, or I just don't have the time, or I have this long commute, or I travel to work or whatever. Like once you figure out that there are great alternative products that you can still, you know, feel nostalgic about, you know, I think it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about craft and what happened there. So you and another blogger started talking about the yellow dye that was in the Kraft macaroni and cheese and gained national attention for that. You want to let our listeners know what happened?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I started a petition on change.org/craftyellow. And it was in response to a piece that I've written about how American companies are exploiting Americans with ingredients banned in other countries. And, you know, during this investigation that I did, I found out that, for example, Betty Crocker Red Velvet Cake Mix is being sold in the United States with a totally different ingredient list than the United Kingdom. For example, in the United States, our cake mix has genetically engineered cornstarch and genetically engineered trans fat oil from soybeans and cottonseed oil. It has propylene glycol, which is an ingredient like antifreeze. It's got Red 40, which is made from coal tar. It's got cellulose gum, which is, you know, a wood pulp filler. But then when you go look at the ingredient list in the United Kingdom, it's like, you know, flour and palm fat and like things that you can recognize, and it's colored with paprika instead of Red 40. And the same goes with, like, for example, McDonald's French fries. McDonald's French fries really lit a fire under me, because when I saw the ingredients and I saw that they're using TBHQ, which is like the same stuff they use in nail polishes and like varnishes and things. And then they were using this anti-foaming agent that is like the ingredient in breast implants and the key ingredient in Silly Putty in the United States version of McDonald's French fries. But when you go overseas, they're using basic ingredients, potatoes, vegetable oil that's not genetically engineered, and dextrose, a little bit of sugar. And then they add the salt in after cooking. So, just a totally different way of cooking, a totally different ingredient list. And seeing this, like, you know, side by side comparison of the US list of ingredients versus the UK list of ingredients was like, you know, made people mad. It made me mad. It made me angry. I was outraged.
It should, because, you know, there's a different set of standards, because in our country, we allow all this. So it's just crazy.
Yeah. And I think seeing people's popular brands like Pringles, you know, our Pringles here have two different forms of MSG to make us hook to it and our brain remember that flavor. Mm-hmm. In the UK, they don't use MSG. And, you know, seeing these popular brands and seeing how they're really duping us, and it's not like the companies don't know any better. I mean, they've already reformulated their products overseas. And this is what Kraft did. Kraft reformulated once the Europeans started to move away from artificial food dyes, and a big study came out linking artificial food dyes to hyperactivity in children. They started, you know, requiring warning labels. So instead of putting a warning label on their product, Kraft macaroni and cheese, what they did was they reformulated it, created a red box called Cheesy Pasta. Tastes just like the one here. And I mean, we did a taste test, you know, in our video. Dr. Oz did it on his show. There's another news station in Wisconsin that did another taste test. And actually, everyone liked the UK version better, which was so bizarre, you know, that, you know, if Americans were given the choice, we know that they would choose the UK version that is formulated without artificial food dyes, yellow 5 and yellow number 6, that are, you know, made from petroleum, linked to hyperactivity in children, considered a carcinogen, like contaminated with carcinogens, and do affect asthma and allergies and other things as well. And in the UK, they're using paprika and beta carotene, natural ingredients. And so considering that Kraft is one of the largest food companies here in America, we felt like this was the best company to tackle with this issue. And because they had already reformulated the product too, you know, they don't have to reinvent the wheel. They don't have to create anything new. We thought this was a basic request. And so it's even funny. We reached out to Kraft even before we posted the petition. They didn't respond. And after we posted the petition, after we got 200,000 signatures, they finally saw that it was a serious thing. And they say, you know, their response to us was, they have choices, that they have an organic version of mac and cheese. and they have some without artificial food dyes. Well, the majority of the ones without artificial food dyes have all sorts of other crazy ingredients in them. Mm-hmm. They're the home style version. So they have like a laundry list of ingredients that are dreadful for your health. And then the organic version isn't available. It's just not available. In a basic grocery store that you go to in America, you cannot find that organic mac and cheese, which was really sad because even if parents had the option, it's not available. So all of the ones with the cartoon characters, the SpongeBob, the Finn and Friends. I didn't even know what Finn and Friends was until I started researching this because I don't have kids yet. So yeah, but I had to be like, what is this cartoon? But yeah, so you know, all the ones with these different cartoon characters, you know, Madagascar, are all geared towards children, and they all have the dyes. So right now, Kraft does not offer a Kraft macaroni and cheese geared towards children without the dyes. The same group of people that are being affected by these. By these dyes, getting, you know, possible hyperactivity. And so as soon as, you know, this started to make wave, and we were on every single news station across America, right, and on every major national publication about this. And the massive awareness now of artificial food dyes has been incredible. So I know we won. Like, we, even though Kraft hasn't changed their product yet, we have definitely won, because the amount of people writing to me saying, Bonnie, I didn't know that pickles had yellow 5 and yellow 6 in it. Oh my gosh, I got to stop buying this brand of pickles. Or, oh my gosh, I read about your Kraft mac and cheese petition and I looked at my Doritos and I had no idea it had it in there. And, you know, this awareness is starting to, I mean, people are starting to wake up to this, and it's really incredible.
That is just the key, that awareness.
Yeah, that massive awareness, mm-hmm, people understanding that these are issues, and all of the parents that are medicating their children right now for these issues are becoming aware, and that's the group of people that really need to be reached, you know. And it's really incredible getting the letters from parents, and I got so many letters, and I still am getting them all the time about how they eliminated artificial food dyes from their child's diet and how dramatic the behavior changed.
That is just wonderful. So they've really, their only response was that we have choices, and that was it.
Yeah, that was it. And it's really unfortunate. They also said that they have so many fans for the regular mac and cheese, they don't want to upset them. So they want to offer that still for the people who like the regular mac and cheese.
I'm pretty sure that those fans are not buying it because of their dye.
Yeah. And they're definitely not definitely not buying it because of their dye. It's because they're unaware of the issue.
Right.
You know, they haven't been educated yet about this issue. And, you know, what was really exciting is, you know, and this has been a 3 or 4 month struggle now. You know, it's hard going after a big food company like Kraft, you know, so it's like a full-time job. But, you know, I've been very hyper aware of like everything that's going on in Kraft, and you know, Kraft was sued actually back in early 2000s for using a type of genetically modified corn that was only allowed for animal feed, not human consumption. And yeah, so you know, they've been using fishy ingredients for a while, and what was really interesting is somebody, thank goodness for this person, posted a picture of our version of Kraft mac and cheese imported into the UK. So the UK has its own version, right?
Yes.
But somebody, you know, some company several companies actually import American products, and they sell them in like expat stores and in the world food section. Just like when we go to World Market here, you can go and you can buy like German candy and different things. You know, from other countries. And so somebody was able to get our version of mac and cheese in the UK, and there was this big white sticker warning label slapped on the box. And this young lady, Flo, who's just, she's so amazingly a hero. She probably doesn't even realize it, but she posted this picture on Facebook and was questioning, you know, what's the deal with this? And she was following the petition and started becoming a food babe reader and posted this picture and is like, you know, everybody wants to know what this warning label looks like. Here it is. And, you know, she's 18 years old, has no clue what implications this has whatsoever. And I see this picture and I'm like, about time I see this label, because we were searching for the label that says may cause adverse effects on activity and attention in children on any product that had artificial food dyes in Europe. But we couldn't find anything like on the internet, you know, barring us actually going there and searching for it. You know, we didn't find anything on the internet because we wanted to use that as an example during our petition. And when we started it, and we couldn't find anything. So when she posted that picture, and on the U.S. version of Kraft Mac and Cheese, it said may cause adverse effects on activity and attention in children. I just, alarms sent off in me. It was a slap in the face, because it's like a slap in the face to all of us Americans that are eating this product that has a warning label on it, and in other countries, but not for us in America. And so I said to this girl, I said, hey, can you message me? Can I talk to you? I called her. I said, can you send me this box of mac and cheese? I just want to see it for my own eyes. It was a really blurry photo on Facebook. She sends me the box of mac and cheese. And this is just, I get it a few days before a big announcement that happens in Oregon, which is Oregon finds, you know, contaminated GMO wheat.
Right.
And I get it a couple days before that. And I look at the box and I look at it really closely and I say, what is this in print right beneath the warning label for, you know, hyperactivity? What? It contains GMO wheat? You know, and I'm totally baffled by this. I start researching it like crazy. I ask, you know, the head of Food and Water Watch about it when I had lunch with her recently. I ask other GMO experts about it, you know, the head of Non-GMO Project, some other, you know, folks that I know that are in my realm of influence. And everybody said, oh, it must be a mistake, or, you know, this is, just can't be true, or, you know, there could be, you know, contamination issues, or it could be that our soybean and corn fields are so contaminated that they somehow got into our wheat and they had to label it. Like, there were so many mysteries to it. And today, still today, there's still so many mysteries to why this distributing company decided to put the words contain GMO wheat in there, and so much so that the New York Times investigated it as well. And they the best thing could have happened I could have ever imagined through any media outlet is they actually posted posted the picture smack dab right in the middle of the business section of the New York Times and online on their website for everyone to see.
So has Kraft have they denied it, or what have they said about it?
Well, they say they do not use genetically engineered wheat because it's not available. So,
well, why do they have the label then? That doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And they say that this is like a rogue, distributor, not anybody that they work with. And Tesco, you know, who is the third largest retailer in the world, is carrying this product. So they're obviously, you know, I'm sure they have a very good vetting process for the distributors that they have. And basically they, said that this box comes into their store already labeled like this. And this is the standard for the majority of the products that come in from the United States. You know, they have these genetically engineered warnings on them. But the fact that it said genetically engineered wheat, we still don't know why, that happened. And Kraft, you know, has said that they don't use genetically engineered wheat. And even if they don't use genetically engineered wheat, we know that they use GMOs in their Kraft mac and cheese. And we also know that their product is going to cause an adverse effect in children. And they couldn't deny that. And they didn't respond to that part of the label at all in the New York Times piece, or at all to any reporter for that matter. And they won't talk to me at all, even though I met with them when I delivered, we have over 300,000 signatures now, but I delivered 270,000 to their headquarters at the beginning of April. And I met with them at their headquarters, and they said they'd keep the door open and talk to me and answer my questions, but they won't respond to emails. They will not respond to my phone call. And honestly, it's one of the worst PR mistakes that I've ever seen out of any company that I've written about or tried to work with for change. And it's unfortunate because I know I would have probably never posted this picture or anything, considering, you know, if they were actually trying to make this change or trying to work with me or say, you know, in a year and a half, we're going to innovate and we're going to try to do this or whatever it may be, or just even simply answer my questions.
Mm-hmm.
And prevent kind of, you know, a smearing of their label. But, you know, in all actuality, they're a company we can't trust. You know, if they're not even willing to speak to me, you know, the person representing 300,000, you know, people, if they're not willing to speak to me, doesn't that like send a huge alarm, like that we shouldn't even trust them?
Absolutely. But I think more importantly, one of the things that you've done is you've brought the awareness to the masses about craft. So, you know, we've got to affect their bottom line. And
absolutely,
when their bottom line starts being affected, then they're going to make a change.
No, absolutely. And, they, you know, the thing is Kraft is a giant company, and there's so many brand names that fall under Kraft that, you know, people just don't know that they're buying. And so what I like to do is I tell people what all those brands are. And so I create a little infographic. It's available on my Facebook page and available on the blog itself. And it just shows you, like, you know, for example, Jell-O. Jell-O is made by Kraft. And what people could do instead, and or Jet marshmallows, you know, they're made by Kraft, or those little Mio water drops that are, you know, deadly little chemical poisonous.
Oh, I know, and people think they're, you know, they're being really healthy.
Yeah, no,
I don't
know,
but great for bringing that awareness to people, because I think that those are big right now.
Yeah, those little drops. Oh,
so,
they drive
so
me
what's
nuts.
next for you, Food Babe? Anything in the works?
Well, I'm working on a lot of different projects right now. I've got a laundry list of topics I need to cover on the blog. If I could only have the time to write all of them at once, because I just want to get this information out there to so many people. I actually filmed a TV pilot, which is very exciting.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, no, very exciting. And, it's being, you know, shopped around and decided upon and all of that stuff that happens in the production world. And it's very slow. And so I don't know if anything's going to happen with it yet, but we'll, you know, I'll let you guys know as soon as I know. And I am working on a book too. So, so lots of things happening over here. And, I'm going to continue to, you know, educate people about what's really in their food. And I'm going to continue to hold companies accountable for their decisions and what they're feeding us. And I really hope that people, you know, join with me and become active. And it's so incredible. I tell you, I cannot tell you how inspired I am every day, reading comments on Facebook and comments on the blog and hearing from readers when they email me and they tell me about their own story, or they tell me about how, you know, they called this company and they said this and look what they said back and I know better. And, you know, and like, you know, sharing information with me, about their everyday kind of investigative nature or their own activism. And I tell you, I would have never gotten into the Kraft headquarters that day when I went to go deliver the petition if it wasn't for, some of the big, websites and GMO activists like, you know, Occupy Monsanto and, Nativa, the company, GMO Inside, you know, Food Democracy Now, you know, all of these major, huge organizations. They all shared, a photo that said, call the Kraft headquarters and let Food Babe in. And it's like, you know, everybody was rooting, for everyone. And I really like that camaraderie and this togetherness that this community online has created, and how we're all like fighting for the same goal, and there's no like pride or anything in it, and it's everyone's doing their part. And I tell you, it's just incredible witnessing how powerful we can be when we're together, when we're all working together, when we're calling together, when we're posting together. You know, even to this day, when I go to the Kraft Mac and Cheese page on Facebook, it's just like delightful. All these people are posting comments, and
they haven't banned you yet.
they have it. It's so bizarre.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, it's great.
What you're doing is just really, it's so needed, and I just applaud you, for doing this, because, like you said, we all need to work together, and we need to educate. I think it's the key, because there are still so many that don't know.
There are. And, it's funny. I quit my job in January because I knew I had a calling to do this, and I had to allow myself to do it. It was really scary at first, just giving up your paycheck and just going full force and becoming a food activist and, just doing this, because you know that you're going to bring out a better world. And I tell you, I know I'm going to have work until the day I die, which is not a sad thing. I think it's a positive thing, because there's so many people in this world to reach and so much information to give everyone. And, we do have a lot of work to do.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being a guest on our show today. And your website is foodbabe.com, and your Facebook page is Food Babe. If you haven't been on the blog or the Facebook page, there's just a ton of information. I follow it every day, and I learn a lot from you. So thank you. I think education is the key. And like I said, there's many who don't know. And the more that know, the more of us will be able to say no and to really do something where we can create this world that is free of GMOs and, a safer place for our kids and our grandkids.
Definitely. Thank you so much, Carol.
Thank you so much. And thank you all for listening. This is Food Integrity Now. And please stay informed, be healthy, and be active.